to another. So.
Okay, now we're live.
All right, we'll resume our joint committee.
There it is. It was in the list here somewhere.
So, co-chairs, Paul Warner, Legislative Revenue Office. In the time we have remaining for the Joint Tax Reform Committee, I thought we would spend a little bit of time responding to some questions we had from last Thursday. And just looking at it, and of course, this came up during your conversation with the state economist, was the idea of the stability. So some of the material we've done in the past with looking at different proposals and also looking at, in general, goes back to the time of the Tax Restructure Task Force in 2009. We developed an idea of looking at the impact of the mix of taxes on stability. And so we thought we'd revisit that again and look and see how something like a moving to a commercial activity tax might affect Oregon's stability based on the mix of revenue we have. So if you look on the table here, we show the Oregon, these are state taxes, Oregon's state tax mix comparing to Idaho, Washington, the U.S. average, and then what I've got what's called an Oregon simulation. I think the number probably that you're all very familiar with is when you look at Oregon's state taxes, 70% come from the personal income tax, highest percentage of any state for any single source. You can see where corporate income taxes, excise taxes, the other taxes, estate taxes would be in that category. So you can see the Oregon mix, the Idaho mix is a lot more balanced in terms of its state between personal and sales taxes. Washington, of course, heavily tilted toward the sales taxes. And you can see the U.S. average there, they're roughly equal. The simulation that I put together just for purposes of looking at how that might affect the stability of the state system was to plug in a 0.78% commercial activity tax, a $250 million personal income tax reduction, and then an elimination of the corporate income tax. So that's how I changed the mix here. Unfortunately, the census data that we work with on this doesn't break out sales versus gross receipts taxes. They do tend to follow roughly the same pattern over the business cycle, although as we've talked about, over time, the retail sales tax base is declining significantly, whereas the gross receipts base is remaining relatively steady. So that's the simulation we looked at. Oregon would still have a large proportion of its revenue coming from the personal income tax, but will be down from the current law levels, and then there would be the gross receipts tax would be about 16% of state tax revenue based on the FY16 data. So if you look at the next slide on the stability measures, what we do is we have an ongoing tabulation of census data that goes back to 1989, and it looks at, these are national numbers, it looks at state tax revenue sources as a 12-month moving average, and this is updated every quarter. So this is based on data from 1989 through the fourth quarter of 2016. Then what I've done is taking that national data for those revenue sources, plug in the mix of the different states. So these are not actually the state's data, but it's their mix of taxes and how it performs and how it affects their stability. So the first line to look at would be average annual growth over time. And you can see one of the things that stands out about Oregon is it has a relatively high average annual growth from its mix. We're not saying its economy is better. We're saying that the personal income tax grows more over time. It has a higher income elasticity over time. And that's why Oregon's average annual growth would expect it to be higher, everything else the same, because of our reliance on the income tax. Now, on the other hand, if you look at Washington, who's the opposite, with a reliance on consumption taxes, notice that its average annual growth is almost a full percent less than Oregon's. And again, that's because of the retail sales tax being slowly growing. Now, the second line to look at, and the most important in terms of stability, is the standard deviation. So you can see Oregon, compared to the national averages, is way above, and our standard deviation is double the Washington standard deviation. So that's the kind of trade-off you make when you think about a traditional retail sales tax and a personal income tax. You get faster growth over time. It's more responsive to the economy, highly elastic over time. The downside is it's volatility. The standard deviation is much greater for our system because of our reliance on the personal income tax. The other element that contributes to that standard deviation is the corporate income tax. It even has the highest standard deviation of any of the tax sources. So that's how the system looks under current law. You can see the difference between Oregon and the U.S. average. If you look at the last column, this is plugging in the simulation for Oregon, where we take about 16% of our revenue, presumably coming from a gross receipts tax, and 61% from the personal income tax. You can see our average annual growth drops slightly, and our standard deviation drops almost a full percent. So, but still, compared to the national average, we have higher growth, more volatility, because we're still 60% reliant on the personal income tax. So, but you can see the impact that shift makes on stability. It does improve stability. And, of course, the more you make that shift, the greater you improve your stability. But the downside is, and Mark mentioned this in his presentation, that you start to have some concerns about the impact of the distribution of the tax burden when you move away from the personal income tax. The next slide I have is one we've updated at least for 10 years, is looking at the Washington General Fund versus the Oregon General Fund. The Washington General Fund, by the way, is more diverse. Not only do they have, of course, they have the retail sales tax and the B&O tax, but they also have a real estate transfer tax, for example, which generates over $1 billion. Their marijuana tax revenue is flowing into their general fund. They have a property tax, statewide property tax, that's part of their general fund. So they have a more diverse general fund. Their retail sales taxes are about 48% of their general fund. So whereas we're looking at close to 90% for the personal income tax, their retail sales tax about 48% because of these other sources. So you can see that the pattern that we've seen, and again, this is a very consistent pattern, that you see stronger growth in Oregon during economic expansions, and you see sharper, deeper drops during recessions. Part of that is due to that employment data that Mark showed you over the cycle. Oregon's going to drop more than the U.S. average, so our economy is more cyclically sensitive. That's going to drive down our revenue during those periods. But it also interacts with our mix of taxes, that standard deviation that's greater from the personal income tax. So that combination of forces causes that sharper, deeper drop during those recessions. And then you can see, as we've gone into the current expansion, we're growing faster year over year than Washington is. So the final thing I did is to look at, to take that simulation, that mix we had, from the simulation where we've got a 15% of 16% of state taxes coming from a gross receipts tax. So I assume that we started in 1999-01 with that mix. So I reduced the personal income tax reliance to 61%, and then I reduced the general fund by that amount and adjusted the 99-01 general fund numbers. And then compared with actual, assume the other components grew as they did historically, but I substituted in a gross receipts tax, corporate activities tax, and assumed that its growth rate was equal to the B&O over that period. So when you've seen that, you saw the B&O numbers we looked at. So again, you can see the impact what the simulation, stability would have been in recent history if you would have had that different mix in place when we started going through the deep recessions of the 2000s. And if you look at 2001-03, we dropped about 8%. And with a different mix, we would have dropped about half of that, about 4%, a little bit more than Washington, again, because we have the personal income tax, but still about half of what we actually dropped. The other thing is, I know what we've mentioned before, to always keep in mind about that 8% drop in that recession was that we count $400 million in revenue that you actually were forced to borrow through credit appropriation bonds. And that, without that 400, that would drop would have been about 12%. So, and then 2003-2005, you can see the recovery wouldn't have been as strong. 2005-2007, close to as strong in terms of percentage increases, but not quite as much. And then again, in 2007-2009, you see that we don't drop as much during the 2007-2009 period. And the 2009-2011 period, we don't come back quite as much as that. That recession, the Great Recession, was really stretched over two biennia. And you can see how it impacted those numbers. Interestingly, if you look at the percentage change, average percentage change for the actual general fund compared to this simulated general fund, it was identical over that period of time. So there was no overall loss in growth. That had to do with the fact that we had a couple of recessions in that period, where you would tend to lose some growth relative to the actual mix would be if you have extended expansions like we're in now, where you continually get pluses from the personal income tax side, and then those are, of course, go away quickly in a recession. So when you build in the recessions, it equals out. So that's what I have, Mr. Chair. I hope that addressed some of the questions I know several of you had asked on Thursday. See if there are any questions that you have.
Nice job, Paul, in showing how we can bring down the stability, at least those peaks and valleys. On that one slide, the green tips mm-hmm. that go up, you know, you can circle about half of those times when kickers went out on those two troughs. Of course, there's no opposite mechanism for a kicker. Ben mm-hmm. Wesley used to always say our tax system brings in too much in good times and not enough in the bad times, and it's in those bad times when we have train wrecks. So, questions of Dr. Warner. Representative Marsh.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you, Dr. Warner, for this. So the modeling that you put together for us this morning is based on a 0.78 HSE's tax. And I wonder if you could say something. We've certainly talked about tax rates that are higher, that could be higher. We've talked about one significantly lower. I wonder if you could say, talk about the impact proportionally of different tax rates on the things you've analyzed today. And secondly, whether you can kind of identify a sweet spot in there in terms of supporting the specific elements that you're looking at.
Mr. Chair, Representative Marsh, I think the trade-off is clearly on the stability side. You can see here you're going to be more stable over the course and less sensitive to the recessions the bigger that CAD is relative to your general fund. So, I mean, if you were to scale down the personal income tax more, for example, so that its percentage is lower and you get more from the CAT, you'd see more like the Washington kind of stability measure. So there's a definite benefit in terms of stability by increasing it. But, of course, also, as you've talked about, there are a lot of other things to consider when you look at the mix of taxes that you have. One of the key ones that you know, quickly shows up when you look at our simulations through the OTIM model is the impact on the distribution of the tax burden. So as you move toward these more stable taxes, more consumption-oriented taxes, then you begin to have a disproportionately higher impact on lower-income households. So that's obviously a critical factor that has to be taken into account for that balance. And then finally, the other important distinction here when you think about these kinds of trade-offs and comparisons, our models have consistently shown that consumer-oriented taxes, we've talked a lot about the destination source taxes, tend to have less of an adverse impact on economic activity than do income or property or wealth taxes. And the reason for that is those taxes influence the return to labor, return to capital, whereas consumption taxes have less of an effect. So it's putting together that combination of those, the economic impacts, impact on competitiveness, the equity distribution impacts, plus the your ability to manage the budget through the stability impacts and over time. So it's that combination of three. And there's no perfect answer, but those are the things to think about.
Okay. Thank you, Dr. Warner, for those. And this joint committee will meet again on Thursday. We will have some new computer modeling to look at. And I hope to have an actual bill next week, maybe by Tuesday, for us to actually look at. And I hope at that point, later in that week or the following week, to open up some public hearings, get the public engaged in this, maybe even if that includes an evening, perhaps. So, yeah, I know. I'm looking forward to that. So, thank you all.